Good morning, here we go. Let's go to this podium.
Before we get started, we do have a number of chairs that are empty over here. I'd ask you, if you would, please come over and take a seat, make yourself comfortable. Number of chairs in the front, great number of chairs over to my right. More than welcome to come up and have a seat. Again, welcome. Very pleased to welcome you to Arkansas State University Mountain Home. I'm Robin Myers, Chancellor here, and I do appreciate you all being out here today. I appreciate everyone who is working on behalf of all the people of Arkansas and doing many great things to help us through this crisis. Before we get started, I'm going to ask Governor for a point of personal privilege, and I didn't ask the Governor about this, so I apologize, but we didn't have a chance. But we have a staff member who lost a mother and a brother in the last 10 days here, and I'd just like to ask for a moment of silence, if you wouldn't mind, and remembrance of them and sympathy to him. Thank you all. It is so important to our staff members here and our employees that we have faith and solidarity with them in this time. Again, we're very pleased to have you here today. We've got a great clinic going on out in the other ballroom, and it's my great privilege and pleasure to welcome to you today our outstanding governor, Governor Asa Hutchinson. Please welcome him.
Thank you. Chancellor, thank you very much for your hospitality here and my sympathies to you. I know that's tough losing somebody's close to the faculty here. And thank all of you for coming. I know it's right at noon. It's not the best time in the world, but I'm trying to get around the state and to talk about where we are in the state in terms of the pandemic, in terms of the virus. And I want to express my appreciation, Ron Peterson, for his leadership. Ron, is that you over there in that mask? I think it is. So Ron's been on my winter COVID task force. He's really helped guide us in our response. And I know your team is borne the brunt of this. So thank you for being here today. The mayor, I got a county judge. We've got our legislators here. Where are our legislators? Representative Fortner, thank you for being here. Who else do we have? I miss anybody? Okay. Anyway, thank you, Jack, for being here and for all of you. And, you know, the whole idea is to have a conversation to understand. Obviously, I think that it's important for us to address the pandemic, to increase our vaccination rate, which I'll talk about. But let me set the stage a little bit for our conversation, and then I'm going to turn the floor open. And first, how did we get here? Because let's remember last June 7th, which is not that long ago. On June 7th, we had in Arkansas 1,594 active COVID cases. Right at 1,600. So on July 25th, a little over a month later, we have over 15,000 COVID active cases in Arkansas. If you look at the daily new cases, on June 7th, we had 62 new cases. On this last Saturday, we had 1,022 new cases in one day. And then if you look at hospitalizations, on June 7th, we had 175 hospitalizations as a result of COVID. And then on July 25th, that went from 175 to 919 that we currently have. And so whenever I get texts from hospital administrators saying, what's the state plan whenever we're out of space and we're exhausted our surge capacity, what do you do with the patients that are coming to the hospital? And of course, the reasons for this increase is two. One, we have the Delta variant, which is more transmissible, and it has a quicker lead to illness and hospitalizations than anything else, than our original virus. And so that's a challenge for us, the Delta variant. And then secondly, our low vaccination rate in Arkansas. And I want to talk about that for a second. And the vaccination, though, and that's the good news, the vaccination is effective against the Delta variant, even though it is more transmissible and can cause a greater percent chance of hospitalizations. But we have a couple of graphs up here I wanted to show you. What do we got first? So this is, I got to stand back, there it is. The vaccination rate among individuals that are 18 and older in Mountain Home and Baxter County. And so you can see on the dark color would be the Mountain Home, and you have 8.5% partially and 48% that is fully immunized. You add those together, well, you're going to get about 56%. Hopefully they'll be fully immunized soon. That's of the 18 and older population. It's interesting, whenever you look at the entire county, Baxter County, it drops down. And you see that consistently across the state, that in the city, you've got a higher rate of vaccination than you do out in the rural areas. And then I think we've got some other counties that are local around here. So you can see the vaccination rate in Fulton County, 24%, Marion County, 27%, Searcy, 32%, Stone, 33%, and Izard County, 27%, and these are 18 and older. Now, I set as a goal, So these are some of the lowest vaccination rates in northern Arkansas, in the state of Arkansas, and they're actually some of the lowest vaccination rates right now in our nation. Now, if you look at, I set a goal that we would have 50% of our entire population in Arkansas, the whole population, not 18 and plus, but the entire population, vaccinated at the 50%, 50% of our entire population vaccinated by the end of July. It's not the end of July yet, but I'm very pleased that we have nine counties that have reached that goal. And so you look at Benton County, Pulaski County, you look at some rural counties, Bradley County, these have all reached the goal of 50%. In fact, they're Benton, Pulaski, Conway, Arkansas, Washington, Monroe, Dallas County, DeShay County, and Bradley County. So some rural counties have met that goal of 50%. Others, and many of them, are lagging behind. And I'm trying to figure out exactly what the issue is and whether there's anything that we can do to better address that. Now, the other part of the urgency of where we are right now is that school is starting. Do we have any school administrators or school officials here? Yes, sir. Would you introduce yourself? Mountain Home, do we have any other schools here? Good. Thank you for being here, because school's a big part of the equation. I just spoke this morning to the Arkansas Association of Educational Administrators, so school superintendents, principals, thank you for taking the priority to be here. And of course, there's a lot of urgency because the 12 and under cannot be vaccinated under FDA guidance. They're still doing some checks on that. And so, you know, so the question is, you know, how do you handle that in the school environment for those that cannot be vaccinated? So that's exactly where we are right now. If you look nationally, and it's interesting to me when you look nationally at the states that are, have a high vaccination rate. Now, if you look at the highest states with vaccination rates, Vermont has a 77% vaccination rate, Massachusetts 74%, Connecticut 74%, Maine 74%, Rhode Island 72%. And guess what? Their cases are not at the same level ours is. The states with the lowest vaccination rate, you know, we're in good company in the sense of Alabama, Mississippi, Arkansas, and Louisiana, all Southeast Conference states with the lowest vaccination rate. Somehow Wyoming got pushed into that. They're also one of the low vaccination rates. And so I'm concerned about it as we get ready for school. I would like to see our vaccination rate go up, but I know we have some people here that some of just have put it off. Some people are resisting it, and I want to thank our health department here that has a, is that your hospital, the Baxter County Hospital, that has a vaccination clinic out here?
Yes, it's okay. A combination effort between the hospital, health department, and ASU Mountain.
Right. Well, anyway, I appreciate them being here. And since I've been having these COVID conversations, our vaccinations in Arkansas have gone up 40%. Now, I think that is true because this goal is to have a conversation, understand concerns, and try to address those. But it's also because we're motivating the communities. And so just when you realize that it's out in the rural areas, you know, there's a strategy that can be implemented. And so we went to Batesville, and Batesville, after we left, they had a community organization and a steering group that got engaged and said, what more can we do? And they have a strategy in place. The other reason is that the risk factor has increased. As we see more hospitalizations, as we see the Delta variant, people are saying, now's the time to get the vaccine. Now, and I see the signs, my body, my choice. There's no mandate for anybody to get a vaccine. And that's why, you know, I'm left with the tool of encouraging people to get the vaccine and to think through it and what are the objections from a health standpoint. And that's why we have a physician community here as well. And you've probably got people with experience, but there's not any mandate out there. There's a limit as to what the government can do. And it's about individual decisions. It's about individual decisions, and we want people to make good decisions. So with that, let me turn this open for questions and comments. This is a town hall meeting to have a conversation. Yes, ma'am.
When do you see the FDA giving approval? Because I have heard a lot of people tell me they're hesitant to getting it because they have not given final approval. And from what I understand, these vaccines have gone through more iterations than a lot of other things that the FDA has approved quicker.
Great question, and I agree with
it.
So one thing I do ask is that we're respectful in our conversations. I'll recognize people who want to talk, but let's ask a question, make a comment, and then let's be respectful of each other. The question is about FDA approval, and I've addressed this directly with our FDA commissioner, raising the problem, because in every town hall meeting, I hear that same question asked. And it's a little bit frustrating because the data is there, the science is there, and you know, the medical professionals say it's a matter of the FDA just simply getting their work done. I expect that to happen, just my estimation, before school starts, which will be very, very important because that does give people a higher level of confidence. And we don't want anybody to think that the FDA is rushing anything. They want to base it on science, and so I'm sure they're going through that process, but we are anxious for that final approval. I hope that happens before school starts. I did want to introduce Dr. Jennifer Dillahay, who's our state epidemiologist. I handle that question, but there'll be some questions that I will punt over to Dr. Dillahay. I see right back in the back here a question, and we'll come up here. Okay, back in the back. You mean whenever they do give FDA final approval, do I advocate for businesses and schools to mandate vaccines? The answer is no. I do believe that that hospitals, that businesses have their freedom of choice, and they have a lot of motivation to require a vaccine for those that work in a sensitive environment. That's their decision to make. But no, I would not be pushing for the government to do any mandate there. That is about individual choice.
Okay.
So yes, you can't have government mandated, but businesses, employers, and schools will be allowed to that student mandated vaccine or to shop or to.
That's their freedom. That's their individual choice, just like the sign says. That's their business. They can make the choice for their business. All right. We have a I had a question here, and then we'll come over here. Right here. That's a great, that's a very, very good question. And the answer is, I want to focus on getting everybody vaccinated. I know what that for the 12 and under, they can't get vaccinated. And that's why we have a guideline that mask wearing would be appropriate for those. And that's a health guideline, even though it's not a mandate. I think if from a conservative standpoint, you certainly can make the point that local school districts ought to be able to make their own decisions as to what is in the best health of their students. I see Representative Fortner might have a comment on that. So I'm going to be meeting with the Speaker of the House and the Senate Pro Tem tomorrow, talking about how we should address that. Until that is changed, or if it is changed, we'll address it in a different way and give that local option there. But until then, we can protect those children best by everybody getting vaccinated around them. And that gives a very, very safe environment in the school. And the data shows that that younger age group are, if they were positive, they would be asymptomatic. Now, parents rightfully, understandably worry about the Delta variant and whether that's would have a different kind of impact. But we'll continue to look at that, and thank you for your comment.
17 children in Arkansas Children's Hospital with COVID today. Half of them are in the ICU, and half over five of those are on ventilators. These are higher numbers than we've ever had, and it's spreading worse. That's my main concern.
It's the right concern. We've lost two adolescents. Now, I don't know how many of those are in Children's Hospital are under 12 and over 12, but if they're over 12, they could be vaccinated. Yes, ma'am.
Proud member of our Ready for Learning Committee at Mountain Public School System. I'm very proud of our local administrators and teachers who are in school, in person, all year long. And we just want to know the school did so much to protect our community last year. What can our community do to protect our school this year?
Well, thank you for being a part of the Ready for Learn committee, and we will be releasing the new guidance tomorrow, probably tomorrow late. We're trying to make sure we get it right in terms of what the guidelines are that we suggest. But it's very important that each school district first look at what's going to be your guidelines on mask. Hopefully you'll follow the Department of Health guidelines on that. We do believe it will be an incentive for those going to school that if you're vaccinated, you don't have to quarantine if you're exposed. Now, I know my grandson plays basketball, and that's a pretty big motivator for him. And so, but then we're also looking at those that would wear masks And if they are exposed to someone, we're looking at what the quarantine requirements would be and whether there's some incentive to wear a mask that would give you more freedom in the schools. And so we want to keep it healthy, but we also, big part of that is compliance with some of those guidelines. The other thing that's different this year is we do have some federal dollars to each school district to help with improved ventilation, with other protective measures that might be necessary. And I know your committee, I'm sure, is looking at that with the superintendent.
They've already done it.
You all are way ahead of me. So thank you. Thank you. Do you have any suggestions, ma'am, for the legislature or for me?
You want to talk
offline
on that?
Wait,
wait.
Well, thank you. We'll talk some more. All right. So I see a hand right. Well, let's go back here, and then we're going to come up to the front. Okay. Yes. Somebody back there. We got a lot of good participation.
I was just wondering, I want to talk about, or want you to talk about the mask mandate and where does that come from and where is the authority to implement the mask mandate or any mask mandate?
Well, right now we have no mask mandate. There was one, and I did it under my emergency powers. It was challenged in court, and the court ruled in my favor on it. So it was within my authority as governor on a public health crisis. Now, but as to where it came from, of course, it came in consultation with our Department of Health and the public health guidance that we didn't have a vaccine at that point, and that was the only measure to protect us and make sure we keep our businesses open. And so that's the reason we did that. So where was the other question? Right here. Yes, sir.
Thank you. I'm a water provider. I'm a accidentality. My wife's mother was Ruth Franco. Many of you may remember her. She was the public health administrator for Baxter County for many years before she retired. She passed away last year, a year ago this month. Obviously a big advocate for public health, vaccinations, and she was very concerned about the information that was being disseminated about vaccines and about the virus. In her lifetime, she obviously had seen many viruses and had administered literally thousands of vaccines. And we're not unlike many families in here. We have family members that are against vaccination. And she said to us, until we have a serious illness or death in our family from COVID, that this family is not going to take it seriously. Unfortunately, we had our 13-year-old grandmother test positive for COVID yesterday. We're keeping her in our hearts and prayers, thoughts and prayers, that she will survive. But the question I have is, how do you counter some of the crazy information that people are basing their decisions on not to get vaccinated? It confounded my mother-in-law to the point where she was so disturbed about it, she couldn't even talk about it. In her career, she had never heard a backlash to vaccination like we have with this.
Okay, thank you. Listen, thank you for sharing that story, and our prayers are with your 13-year-old
granddaughter.
You know, and what I hope is that two things. One, that we learn from other experiences. It doesn't have to happen to our family before we get that realization that a vaccine is important. Let's learn from the experiences of what we see in other families and from the medical community, what they see. And then secondly, I hope that everybody, the best answer is not me. The best answer is going to a trusted advisor. You know, usually that is your doctor. Usually it's your healthcare professional. And if you have questions, get those questions answered. And that, to me, is the best solution. You know, sometimes they have questions, young people do, for example, about, you know, does this impact fertility? Well, the answer is no, and that's been the data, but they... Dr. Dillahay, do you want to answer that? Since I raised the question, go ahead.
So at this point in time...
Why don't you come over here to the microphone, Dr. Dillahay?
So at this point in time, there is no evidence that the COVID...
All right, so go ahead, Dr. Delhay.
So there is no...
Go ahead, Dr. Delhay.
So there is no medical evidence at this time that the COVID vaccines impact fertility. There is a great deal of evidence that the COVID illness itself causes problems with pregnancy and fetal demise. So I think it's important for people to have factual, accurate information.
We love it, but you keep covering it up.
So ma'am, do you want the microphone to make a comment? You don't need to yell. I'll give you the microphone. Please.
We're tired of this cover up.
Here's, I probably don't need this because I'm pretty loud, but here's my two questions for you. First of all, and yes, it is tragic that we are seeing deaths from COVID, from influenza, from cancer, from smoking, from obesity, all tragic. We have 3 million residents approximately in the state of Arkansas. And you're talking about 300 cases, 1,700 cases. And for that, we should all stand in line for an unproven, untested vaccine that doesn't even seem to really protect people, because people who got the vaccine are not
okay. Thank you. Thank you. So, let me ask Dr. Peterson, or Ron, I'm sorry, Ron. Ron, can you tell us about your experience in the hospital as to, are we having vaccinated people going to the hospital for COVID or unvaccinated?
I can tell you that today we have 33 individuals in the hospital with COVID. I can tell you that it's definitely taxing our system, our healthcare system, our healthcare workers are getting worn out. I've been, and I'll address your issue too, for your concern here in a second. I can tell you that we have postponed open heart surgeries because we have too many patients in the hospital with COVID in our ICU unit. So this week, there will be 2 individuals that will not receive their open heart surgery because of the number of people in the ICU with COVID.
I think.
Sir, please be respectful. Please be respectful.
Answer the question.
Yes, ma'am. Okay. Thank you. I would appreciate that. I can tell you that I don't know how far this is going, but it's going to get very scary, I believe, because we don't know where it leads. And I can tell you that statewide, 98% of the people who are hospitalized have not been vaccinated. I can tell you, Mexico County, we've seen a little different. It's about 90% of all the individuals that are hospitalized at Baxter Regional Medical Center for COVID are unvaccinated.
So he said 90%, and this national statistic is 98%. That 98% of the people who are hospitalized are not vaccinated on COVID.
What about the vaccinated ones that are dying?
those who are dying, 99%+ have not been vaccinated. All right. So let's go ahead. Thank you. Did you have anything else you want to say?
All right.
Well,
I think
over 6,000 have died from it. Currently, we have over 600 statewide hospitalized. So, I have a comment here. Yes, ma'am.
I know two couples with major pre-existing conditions, quite elderly, who got vaccinated and got infected, but understand. They are elderly, major pre-existing conditions. Their reinfections were limited, 24 hours, and that was it. So a lot of those people getting reinfected do not have enough antibodies in their system, probably because of their age and pre-existing conditions.
Well, then why that?
Thank you. Yes, ma'am, right here in the front row. She's been very patient.
Okay. That would be a very helpful thing to show for everybody, all states.
Dr. Dillahay, do you want to address that? Yep. No, good. Thank you.
So one of the issues with people who had natural infection, we don't know at what level their antibodies need to be for them to be protected. We know that people who have more severe disease will develop higher level of antibodies than people who have less severe or mild illness. And then one of the other things that we don't know, you know, the other coronavirus illnesses that we get as humans, common cold, the immunity wanes over time and people can get those viruses again. It's very possible or probable that people who've had the coronavirus that causes COVID-19 will be the same. We know from studies comparing the serum from people who've had natural infection to serum of people who have been fully vaccinated, the people who are fully vaccinated have higher levels of neutralizing antibody than people with natural infection. So I don't think we can trust natural infection to protect us for a long period of time. It probably maybe the first few months, but after that, I'm not sure we can trust it. So I recommend vaccination, even if people have had COVID-19 before. And then one of the other issues is people who've had COVID-19 in the past, we don't know how well they are protected by their neutralizing antibodies from the Delta variant. So I strongly encourage people to go ahead and get vaccinated with the currently authorized vaccines.
So there's a lot of unknowns.
There are.
Unknown.
Yes.
Yes. We don't talk about
here. Yeah, I agree.
All right, that's fair. All right, so I've got two questions over here, and who's been waiting a long time here? All right, let's do one right here, and then we'll come back over here. Yes.
So I think this question might be geared more to the epidemiologist, and thank you for that wonderful question previously, but there are a lot of unknowns. My question is, how does a vaccine that was formed how many months ago now, has it been, since Pfizer was out? 6 to 9 months around here, would we say? How is that going to be effective against the variant that we're just now seeing? And you said confidently that it is effective. From an epidemiological or a biological, How is that possible if it's working and changing? How can you confidently say that it's effective?
Dr. Dillahay, there's a reason she's here.
So the vaccines that were developed by Pfizer, Moderna, and Janssen were tested at a time when the Delta variant was not circulating. So we don't have direct evidence from the vaccine trials about it. We do know that they worked very well in the population that they tested to protect against illness, hospitalization, and death. So now what we're doing is studying the effectiveness, which is what happens in the population. We do that with all vaccines. Once they're available to the public, we study how well they protect. And at this point in time, the authorized vaccines still work well to help prevent illness, and they work well to keep people out of the hospital and to prevent death. There appear to be some changes over time, so that there are studies being done now to determine whether a booster would be recommended for people who had been vaccinated a while ago, or people who are older who may not respond as well to the vaccines, or potentially people who have weakened immune systems. They may need an extra dose.
Specifically the Delta variant, I don't know if you just said that it wasn't around when this was formulated.
Right.
But we can say confidently that it's effective.
Yes.
It's not. It's impossible.
So what we have learned is from other countries where the Delta variant is now dominant, particularly the UK. They have a really good system for sequencing the viruses, and they have found that for the Pfizer vaccine, which they have available there, that one dose is only about 35% effective in completely preventing illness in terms of symptoms, and two doses is in the 80s. I don't remember the number off the top of my head. I think it was like 89%, something like that.
Thank you. Let's go over here.
Okay.
For the Delta variant locally, two did get sick, but not very sick at all.
That's a good question, Dr. Dillahay.
So we do encourage everyone who has symptoms to get tested, whether they've been fully vaccinated or not, especially those people who would be at high risk for severe illness, because they can get treatment with a monoclonal antibody. These antibodies have been authorized by the FDA under the emergency use authorization. There's evidence that they work, as when we see it practically in our experience here. So thank you for sharing that.
Good point. And then let's come over to this side. Shailen, do you want to call on somebody?
Yeah, my major concern is children always. I've devoted a large portion of my life to the kids of this community. And my brother teaches at Cornell University, and he had a study come in that they had to take so fresh from the German virus that they had to take it and get it translated. And what it said is that in an 8-hour day of children wearing a mask in school, there were 86 bacteria colonies and 6 mold colonies in each mask. Now, all medical community and laymen like myself know the possibilities of pneumococcal pneumonia from that. And I want to know why, if this has been forefront for these kids, to try to mask these kids up, it's detrimental to their health, not to mention some of the other pathogens and some of the carcinogens they found in the manufactured masks.
Well, Dr. Hill, hey, you might have to help me out on that, but I can say that, and Dr. Dillahay, correct me if I'm wrong, but that last year, those 8 in the schools where they wore masks, we did not have, we had reduced cases of pneumonia. We had really reduced illnesses in those schools. And so the science is behind the benefit from that, but Dr. Dillahay?
Yes, I haven't had the opportunity to review that particular article, but I will say that the masks are effective in preventing spread of COVID-19, and they also help to protect the wearer from, especially if you wear one that does a good filtering job to help prevent infection. So we did see a great decrease over this last year of influenza, RSV, and other respiratory viruses and pathogens, bacteria. And I think that a lot of it is attributed to the fact that many people were wearing masks.
Could our superintendent, do you have any questions or comments? Thank you. Ma'am, did you have a question? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
First of all, I'd like to say that I am not an anti-vaxxer. I'm a truth finder. And I believe in research. I believe in the science. Everybody's science. My grandfather died of the Spanish flu. So I've been listening to about viruses and pandemics my whole life, from my grandmother and my father, my mother and everybody else. So I'm doing my very best to try to give the best information that I can. I really want to follow up with that young lady over there, that one thing that does concern me is everything that I've learned all these years about this, that one of the best things we have is our own God-given natural antibodies. And I am concerned that those numbers are not listed along with the other numbers that we are told about. I believe that we were given an immune system for a reason. I believe that it works. And why those numbers aren't listed, you know, why don't we just have a vaccination number? That concerns me. I hope, Governor, that maybe you would consider putting those numbers up as well, so that we can add that, you know, they should be included in with people that are vaccinated. I feel I am vaccinated. I am back with COVID, and I'm going with that at this point. The other thing I see now is that in studying vaccines, there's so many different vaccines and pandemics for so many years, that natural antibodies last 30 to 70 years, some of them a lifetime. So for somebody to state that these vaccines have a longer lasting antibody for a vaccine that just came out, that was only studied a short term, I don't even know that yet.
So can I make sure I understand your first point? you're asking for that we show data for those that have relied upon their natural antibodies and contracted COVID, or what data?
Either or. Whether they contracted it or whether they didn't.
I don't, can we?
Why can we not allow the people who have natural antibodies to be included with the ones that have been vaccinated as a true, fair, factual assessment of what is really of true numbers? And then also the antibodies that I feel I have last based on decades and decades of study, that natural antibodies last longer. And since we don't know much about the vaccine, to say that it actually, no disrespect, doctor, but to say that it actually lasts longer when we've only been giving it out for a short time, how do we really know that? I just want truth.
Thank you. And I appreciate the question. Did you have any comment on that, Dr. Delahaye?
Yes, sure. So I stated earlier that people who are vaccinated have higher levels of neutralizing antibodies when you compare the serum to people who have been infected with COVID-19 and recovered. That does not mean the antibodies last longer. The studies are still being done to determine the length of the protection that the vaccines provide. And you should also know that antibodies can wane, just like other coronaviruses that cause the common cold. Over time, those antibodies wane, and people can get those same viruses over and over again. So to think that someone is permanently immune from COVID-19 if they have had the illness before is not correct.
Judge, do you have any comment? Where do you think we are here in Baxter County? What more can we do?
I appreciate it. Professional Baxter County Treatment Governor, a great honor. Baxter County, just like the hospital, has been hit pretty hard. As the doc said over a while ago by his staff, the Baxter County Jail and Sheriff's Office is in 1/3 absence right now because they did not get vaccinated. And we are encouraging that because they work close hand in hand with all kinds of people throughout the county. We will have a vaccination yet at one of our largest departments this week. We had a meeting with our health department officer to answer all questions. I would encourage that what I have done in public notice and publicize, and I bother to read, is that thank goodness we have a choice in Arkansas. That doesn't mean that we need to direct people who make the choice as they see fit. And for those who work in the workplaces as we do, side by side, in large departments, as many as 45 in one group, 20s and 30s, it's important that we be protected so that we need to get the job done. So we will encourage everyone to consider and ask a doctor, bring Dr. Atkins in, the health officer, or anyone else to answer your questions and be the right profession. And I encourage you, as I had the vaccine Pfizer, with Moderna, my wife at Pfizer, and I've had it since February, and I'm still here, and I'm still good. So I encourage everybody to consider that as close to your work. We've been very lucky in Baxter County until the last month.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming to Baxter County.
Thank you, Judge. Mayor, you introduced me. Do you have any comment from the city standpoint?
Governor Kent, we just want to say thank you for your leadership. Obviously, lots of diverse opinions about where we are and where we're going. And I think the real issue here today, and what I really do appreciate, is everybody has the option and the choice to do what they think is right for themselves, their family, for their body. So I do want to say thank you. And again, thank you for being here today.
All right. So we got time for just a couple more questions. I'd like to hear from people who haven't raised their hand yet. I think there's. Where's that? All right, great. Go ahead.
We got a lot of COVID, and we thought we were turning the corner, and then comes Delta. So, how many other viruses would be in this turning the corner?
You know, I think that's a really good question, which I think, if I heard it right, was do we have a potential for more mutations and different variants in the future? Is that the question? And the answer is, I think it's unknown, but what I understand is that the longer the virus hangs around, the more opportunity it has to mutate and to create another variant. And so that's what I actually worry about, is that because we don't have a sufficient high vaccination rate, that it will lead to an additional mutation down the road. Now, Dr. Delahaye, you better either back me up or tell me I'm totally wrong.
No, that is the case. The more spread, the more times the virus multiplies in a person, the more opportunity it has to mutate and cause additional variants. A lot of times those variants have no impact, but something like the Delta variant or a mutation of the Delta variant could be a very serious situation.
Thank you for the question. Another one?
So, after talking about how this can continue to perpetuate, how are we going to prevent future viruses? We are, and I think it's becoming pretty well accepted that this was likely developed in a lab. What are we doing to prevent that from happening in the future? That's my first question. My second question is, already you have issued a mask mandate. As we're coming into the fall, the numbers, you're not getting them like you want them to by the end of this month. Are we going to be looking at future mask mandates, especially as the school is opening? And another question having to do with children, because there's been a lot of concern about the children. This is not an FDA-approved vaccine. And studies are not done on children. Studies are currently being done on children.
Okay, I got three questions there. First, on the where this virus came from, I'm fully supportive of investigating that, trying to ascertain that completely. I don't think China is cooperating to the level they should, and that's a problem. So we need to continue to investigate that. And if it did develop in a lab or there was negligence in that, they need to be held accountable. In terms of the second part of the question on the mask mandate, there's a prohibition under law right now that the state cannot issue a mask mandate. Whether that changes or not down the road remains to be seen. And as governor, I don't know what's ahead. I don't know whether we will be building field hospitals or whether we will be having schools close down the road. I don't know what happens down there. I don't know what happens with this virus. All I can do is follow the science and the best advice that I get as governor day by day. And so, no, there's not any mask mandate. There's not any plan for a mask mandate, but I don't know what the future holds. All right, so I want to be fair to people who haven't asked a question yet. I'm right here, I think, for one. And then, yes?
Yes, I'd like to talk with her about the mask mandate.
Okay.
You said that it was the mask that kept all of these other diseases at a minimum. I would rather believe that it was the social distancing, because I don't take the flu shot, I don't take the pneumonia shot, I don't take any of them. I'm an old lady, I'll be 82 soon. And I still do a walking marathon once a year. And I want my immune system to keep working. It's important to me. And yeah. I don't want any man-made thing put in. But how did you determine that it was the masks that made these people not get sick, or just the social distancing and nobody being in school?
Well. No, it is a good question, and I'm going to let her answer it, but the mask mandate that was imposed said you should wear a mask if you're not socially distancing. So there's, if you're socially distancing, there's not any requirement. Go ahead, Dr. Gillard.
So I'm sure it was a combination of the things that the governor was talking about, not just strictly masks, but social distancing. Those kinds of things do a very good job of reducing the spread of respiratory illnesses, either viruses or bacteria. And I think that we should learn from this and consider such behaviors in the future when we have outbreaks of other diseases.
And the only other thing I have is when they're letting illegals cross the border,
yes,
with no test for disease, no fact that they don't even ask them if they're sick, they don't test it. And then with our Christian tax dollars, they haul all over the United States and spread all the diseases that they have all over. Why isn't the health department more concerned about those people instead of us?
Yes.
All right. We're concerned about any source of disease that is carried out and available. Now, I'm out of time in terms of, no, I want to take your question, sir. Again, Spoker, I'd like to hear from you, but I just need to wrap it up because it's been right at an hour, and that's what we're trying to do. Yes, sir. What's your question? Yep. Right here. Vaccines were required when I was a child. Dr. Delahaye, what's required for vaccines?
So we do require a number of vaccines for children, K-12, and as you mentioned, for university, it's the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine.
I guess my question is, what's the difference?
Well, one, we're waiting for FDA approval. You wouldn't want once there's FDA approval, then theoretically, if there was a consensus that would be similar. All right, so you all are terrific. Listen, I love everybody expressing themselves. That's the whole idea of these community conversations, is that we hear from a lot of different points of view. Hopefully there was something that was said that is helpful in your consideration. Obviously, I come from the standpoint, I'm encouraging vaccination. My wife, Susan, and I have been vaccinated, fully vaccinated. I think it makes a difference in our life and the safety. My grandchildren have been vaccinated. But it's a decision that you have to make. I encourage it because it is important for school, for individuals, and for our community. Thank you all very much for being here today.
And that's going to wrap up today's town hall from Governor Asa Hutchinson here on the campus of Arkansas State University Mountain Home. We thank you for joining us today from the shed. Now stay tuned for your local news.